10 years ago, the Mexican government intensified its efforts to fight drug cartels by deploying military troops to the state of Michoacán. Ever since then, Michoacán has had one of the highest homicide rates in Mexico. Between rival drug cartels that are fighting each other and the Mexican military that is fighting the cartels, the battles are constant. But in the middle of all of this violence, there is a town that hasn't seen much violence at all. A town that by many accounts is one of the safest in Mexico, a place where people live in peace. And that town is Cherán.
Buenas tardes. Voy a Cherán.
From NPR and the Futuro Media Group, this is Latino USA. I'm María Hinojosa. And today, the Ballad of Cherán. To get to Cherán, you can drive through one of three roads. All three have checkpoints staffed by masked guards with machine guns. The guards stop you and ask you where you're going, where you're from, and why you're driving to Cherán.
Si quieres esperarlo ahí.
Aquí, gracias.
Sí, allá adelante, pues.
Gracias.
It feels sort of like you're crossing an international border in the middle of Mexico. And the thing is, you are sort of crossing a border. Past the guards and the guns, there's a quiet, sleepy town where people walking the streets at all hours are feeling safe. This is not a common feeling in Michoacán, a state torn by drug cartels and violence. This kind of calm seems almost eerie. Cherán is kind of like a big gated community, and it has an unusual form of autonomy. The people of Cherán do not answer to the state government. So if, let's say, Michoacán's governor tried to enter the town of Cherán, the armed guards at the checkpoints would stop him. It's a town that runs everything on its own. It has even banned all political parties. But Cherán wasn't always like this. A few years ago, just like most places in the region, the town was plagued with narco activity until something happened in 2011 that changed Cherán forever. Reporter Jesse Alejandro Cottrell brings us this story.
David?
Sí.
Ah, mucho gusto.
Mucho gusto. Mucho gusto. ¿Cómo
estamos? Muy bien.
If you're lucky, when you arrive in Cherán, you have someone like David Romero to vouch for you and show you around town. He's the opposite of the stern guards who grill visitors as they approach the town's limits. He's friendly, greeting you with a big smile and an enthusiastic handshake. However, if you ask about what happened in 2011, he'll talk to you about trees. Because, according to David, trees are what saved Cherán. To prove it, he'll take you to his pine resin refinery. A collective of pine resin tappers own the refinery together, but David runs it. On a normal workday, the refinery, or resinera, buzzes with activity. Workers haul 55-gallon drums full of unprocessed pine resin across concrete platforms. David's eyes light up as he shows off a steam generator the size of a fire truck, which he pets like a dog.
This is el alma de la,
oh, sí.
Sí, del proceso.
David explains that this machine, making superheated steam like a giant kettle, is the soul of the process. Purifies pine resin into an industrial ingredient that ends up in over 1,200 products, products you run into dozens of times a day without realizing it.
Puedo decir que desde un refresco, un chicle, un medicamento.
David says that pine resin is found in everything from chewing gum to prescription drugs to paintings, varnish, and cosmetics. In a bottle of lemon-lime Gatorade, pine resin colors the drink, it keeps the ingredients from separating chemically, and it sticks the label to the bottle. It's super versatile. And selling it has been a huge part of Cherán's economy for decades, so it's a big deal locally. Also, David boasts, it's sustainable.
Pues esto vive del bosque sin cortar el, sin cortar.
David points out that the resin trade lives off the forest without cutting down the pine trees. He tells me that the tappers harvest resin without stripping the thousands of acres of forest that encircle the town. You tap pine resin similar to how you tap the maple sap that becomes syrup. It's easy to do this, and it can actually improve a tree's health. Cherán sustainably tapped pine trees for half a century. But then, around 2008, things started to change. Organized crime invaded Cherán. Unlike other towns where crime meant cartels manufacturing drugs, in Cherán, criminal activity was centered around one thing, the pine trees. Chopping down and selling Cheran's trees was a way to make a quick buck. So bandits wielding machine guns started to roam the mountains, clear-cutting entire hillsides in days. And the resin tappers who relied on these trees for their livelihoods could do nothing but watch. If they confronted the bandits, they faced threats, beatings, and sometimes death. But illegal logging wasn't new to Cheran. People had been cutting down trees without asking permission forever. What was new was the scale and speed at which the logging was happening. Turns out that behind this was one of the most powerful local drug cartels at the time, La Familia Michoacana. If the name sounds familiar to you, that's because La Familia Michoacana made headlines for tossing decapitated heads onto a Michoacan dance floor and claiming it had divine right to murder. At the height of their power, some researchers estimated that La Familia was involved in 85% of all legitimate business in Michoacan. And in Cheran, La Familia found that they could quickly and easily sell the lumber from Cheran's forests. They operated in Cheran with impunity, coming and going as they pleased. And the people could do nothing but watch. It was the heavily armed cartel La Familia versus Cheran, a peaceful town of Purépecha Indians. Cheran just couldn't compete. David Romero, the head of the Resinera you heard earlier, began working at the refinery around the same time that La Familia started clear-cutting the town's forests. He quickly realized that it was a dangerous time to do business in Cheran.
Me sentía con miedo andar en la calle.
David felt afraid to walk the streets. Aside from cutting down trees and the guns and general bullying, La Familia ran several illicit operations in Cheran, including demanding protection money from successful businesses. One day, as David was on his way to the Resinera, he received a phone call from one of his coworkers.
Comentan que andaban dos camionetas que han de haber sido como unas...
David says that they told him two trucks carrying nine armed men had shown up looking for him. But David had mixed feelings.
Fueron sentimientos encontrados. Ese momento tuve miedo, pero dije, ah, dice, ahora sí ya no.
Sure, he was afraid, but at least now the Resinera was successful enough to warrant a shakedown. Regardless, David never went to work that day. He feared that the armed men would come back and try to extort him again, or worse. So from that day forward, David instructed his employees to use some unconventional methods to avoid catching the attention of the cartel.
Decía, no corten el pasto, déjenlo que crezca la maleza.
He told them not to cut the grass and to let the weeds grow, anything to make the factory look old and left behind. However, by spring of 2011, there was little resin work to be done anyway. The illegal logging operations protected by La Familia had cut down half the forest. The number of resin tappers from Cheran dwindled to just a few dozen. According to David, for years he and the resin tappers had warned other community members about the extent of the illegal logging, but no one listened. The clear-cut forests were outside the sight lines of the town, and the resin tappers were among the poorest people in Cheran, so they had little political sway. It seemed like the resin industry, along with Cheran's forest, would be lost forever. The vast majority of Cheran's residents are Purépecha, and the Purépechas have long worshipped and defended their trees. In pre-colonial times, they burned logs as offerings to their sun god. Before cutting down a tree, they'd ask forgiveness from the tree's soul. In the early 20th century, when the Mexican government privatized Cheran's communal forest against the town's wishes, the people of Cheran, along with a revolutionary general, attacked the loggers' residences and sent them packing. Those loggers learned the hard way something that La Familia would learn a century later. Attacking Cheran's forest is like attacking its soul. When I visited Cheran, its residents winced when they told me how the forests were destroyed, like they were recalling some grave injury their own bodies had suffered. It was especially painful for them to remember how disdainfully the narcos treated them.
No, al contrario, se burlaban de nosotros.
70-year-old Josefina Estrada Velázquez, also known as Doña Chepa, had a front row seat to the destruction. Her house sits along a main road that leads into the forest. By 2011, Every morning, a convoy of trucks passed by her front door en route to the mountain. Each night, the trucks would return, laden with freshly cut trees. When I met Josefina in her home, I asked her whether the loggers in those trucks seemed self-conscious or ashamed of themselves for desecrating the trees, and she said quite the opposite.
Me hablaban, adiós, señor, y con su cerveza, mire. Eso es lo que se burlaba uno, tenía mejor que agachar la cabeza y no mirarlos.
Josefina tells me that they'd say, goodbye, ma'am, with beers in their hand. She couldn't even look at them. At first, they drove into town carrying guns, but later, they didn't even bother to carry any weapons. They behaved like they were in their own homes. Seeing the illegal loggers, or talamontes as they're known in Cherán, destroy the town's forest was especially painful for Josefina, who has lived in Cherán since birth. She'd spent her childhood in the trees, going into the forest with her grandparents to pick mushrooms. Traditionally, males dominate most aspects of Purépecha society, so Josefina waited for the men of Cherán to act. But according to her, the men feared that the talamontes would kidnap their families if they spoke out, so they said nothing.
Por eso aquí los hombres también no, pues no decían nada por miedo de la familia.
So Josefina, along with a group of older, mostly female neighbors, began discussing how to deal with the talamontes themselves. And then, on April 15th, Cherán's townspeople learned that the illegal logging was threatening the town's source of water. That was the last straw.
After the break, the people of Cherán rise up. That's coming up. No te vayas.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Duolingo, offering the Duolingo Spanish podcast, featuring fascinating, true stories of travels with unexpected turns, plans unraveled, and destinations unknown. It's designed to help you learn Spanish. The stories are told in slow, easy Spanish with regular breaks from an English narrator. Life lessons told through language. Check it out at podcast.duolingo.com or search for Duolingo on your favorite podcast app.
What does it take to start something from nothing? And what does it take to actually build it? I'm Guy Raz. Every week on How I Built This, I speak with founders behind some of the most inspiring companies in the world. Find it on NPR One or wherever you get your podcasts.
Before the break, Cherán's townspeople, like Josefina Estrada Velázquez, were losing patience watching narcos destroy their pine trees. So they decided to take matters into their own hands. Reporter Jesse Alejandro Cottrell again.
At 6 a.m., before the loggers arrived into town ready to load 50 tons of trees, Josefina and her group of elderly women rang the bell at a church near her home. It was too early for Mass, Josefina says, and the church bells only rang out like that if a house was on fire. So when the townspeople didn't see smoke in the sky, they went to the church to see what was going on. According to Josefina, she and her friend didn't need to say much to motivate the crowd against the talamontes. They were ready to act. The group that gathered picked up whatever heavy sticks and rocks they could get their hands on and waited for the trucks to arrive. They stopped the first illegal logging truck at 8:30 in the morning, pulling out the people in the cab and beating them with sticks. The townspeople stopped several more trucks, detaining the drivers. This was the start of the insurrection.
Pues a la vez yo me sentía a la vez.
According to Josefina, that first morning, the townspeople detained five men, all truck drivers. No one objected when the men were beaten up. The mob wanted to kill one of the detainees and even hung him up by a rope. But Josefina told the mob that Cherán wasn't a town of murderers and to let the man down. The man ended up alive but badly wounded. A few hours later, after hearing about the insurrection, La Familia reacted. They sent gunmen to retake Cherán and extract their truck drivers, but the townspeople fought them off with rocks, fireworks, and a few old guns. By nighttime, the townspeople had spontaneously formed a militia. Cherán sits in the middle of a clearing, surrounded by the forest, so it's pretty hard to get in and out of it. The town has just three main entrances. So the militia patrolled the streets and erected barricades at each of the town's three entry roads. no traffic could enter or leave Chirán without going through them first. You might think it crazy that a town of farmers and resin tappers could oust one of the most powerful cartels in Mexico. But the cartels aren't a standing army. They use corruption of politicians and local police as much as outright violence to maintain control. And Chirán knew this. So one of the first things they did after the insurrection was expel their own mayor and police force, anyone they thought was in cahoots with the cartel. And just like that, La Familia lost its grip over the town. And then there's the numbers. Chirán had around 18,000 residents. The night of the uprising, almost every one of those residents took to the streets, sticks and rocks in hand, ready to fight back if La Familia returned. On each street corner, people lit bonfires to keep watch over their neighborhoods. Adult men and women brought chairs out of their homes to sit around the bonfires, waiting to fight the cartels if they returned. Children played in the firelight. The elderly brought food and cooked it over the bonfires to share with their neighbors. That first day was just the beginning. The town was now officially under siege and would remain so for almost a year. Those neighborhood bonfires burned every night. But it wasn't always easy. Chirán residents couldn't leave the town. La Familia was out there, beyond the borders they were able to secure. Josefina remembers that one year, when meat was scarce and the armed men of La Familia waited outside of the secured barricades to kill any resident who emerged.
Pues a la vez yo me sentía a la vez muy contenta.
She worried and asked herself, was it all worth it? Even though she was happy.
Porque, pues decía, a veces valió la pena.
After the first year, though, generally La Familia left Chirán alone. But even though the uprising had expelled organized crime, there were still plenty of talamontes willing to try their luck at cutting down a few trees here or there. Illegal tree cutting in Michoacán operates like poaching, so one of the first acts of Chirán's newly formed communal government was to create the Ronda Comunitaria, a communal police force to protect the town and its forests from whatever treachery still lurked just beyond the town's borders. In the early days of the uprising, the Ronda organized groups of 100 townspeople who would climb the mountainsides around Chirán, carrying sticks and old guns. One of those who volunteered to join the Ronda was our Resinera boss, David Romero. He remembers that the communal police force was mostly made up of farmers and resin tappers, people who'd never used a firearm in their lives. They were a ragtag bunch who didn't know what they were doing. One day, a member of David's volunteer squad horsed around with an AR-15 while the rest of the group watched. Unbeknownst to the volunteer, the gun safety was off.
Nomás escuchamos el sonido. Enfrente nosotros, de todos nosotros.
The gun shut off, making a loud sound as bullets hit the ground in front of David and the other squad members.
Volteamos, le dimos pamba y hasta unas patadas por tonto.
David says that the squad jumped up and began to hit and shout at the volunteer, telling him to use the safety.
¿Qué haces? Porque el seguro.
The volunteer trembled. All he could say was, it just shot off.
Se me salió.
It was a rookie mistake. David's squad was lucky no one died that night. But other nights, they weren't so lucky. One night after working a 24-hour shift, David's fellow volunteers convinced him to take the evening off. While David slept, his patrol was ambushed and two of its members were killed. It haunts him to this day.
Me quedé con ese espinita, ¿no? De no haber estado ahí.
David says that it still pains him that he wasn't there. He wishes he could have been part of protecting the town more directly.
Sino simplemente el defender, pero ya de una forma directa.
During this period of open conflict, Chirán's economy collapsed. With the town barricaded, most industries shut down. Stores shuttered, construction stopped, schools closed, but the resin tappers continued to work. And then, a funny thing happened. Because the forests were now mostly clear of talamontes, the number of resin tappers in town skyrocketed. All of a sudden, business at the Resinera was booming. The only issue was that the Resinera sat outside the safety of the town's barricades.
Entonces, la Resinera quedaba totalmente desprotegida.
The Resinera was totally unprotected, according to David, so he and another worker would go in the evenings, when there were fewer potential eyes on it, to process the resin. They worked with the lights off, turning on portable lamps when they needed to see something. I asked David why he continued to put himself at such great risk. Because it would help the families, he said. I was helping the family.
Sí. Por lo regular siempre hay mucho ruido. Mucho más que esto.
Today the resineta is loud with workers on buzzsaws and arc welders. But David tells me that usually it's a lot louder. When David took over the resineta, it only operated a day a week at most. Nowadays, 6 years after the uprising, it operates 6 days a week and employs half a dozen people full time. David estimates that currently over 500 townspeople tap resin for a living. So David's next step is to refurbish and remodel the 50-year-old facility.
Ahorita toda la cultura que se está teniendo de la reforestación nuevamente.
David says that a lot of young people are interested in reforestation, and the global market for resin is growing. So it's time for the 50-year-old facility to adapt to the moment.
Entonces aquí podemos entender de que también nosotros tenemos que adaptarnos al momento.
And that moment, for Chirán, is still peaceful, though uncertain. Chirán is in Michoacán, which remains one of the most violent parts of Mexico. And while La Familia no longer exists, other cartels have filled the vacuum. In 2016, the state's murder rate jumped 40% to levels not seen since the year Chirán revolted. Meanwhile, the Mexican government suffers severe corruption by criminal elements. Just last year, Michoacán's governor released a well-known local narco who'd been imprisoned after a shootout with police. The influence of organized crime in Michoacán is strong. Chirán's continued success is by no means guaranteed. In the last 10 years, there have been several other towns in Michoacán who have risen up against narcos and corrupt governments. Almost all of them have failed. That said, everyone I talk to in Chirán believe that the town will buck the trend and succeed for years to come. When asked why, they point to Chirán's new government, the one they've had since the uprising. They say it isn't corrupted by political parties. They say this explains why Chirán hasn't had any violent crime in years. Other people, like David Romero, say the uprising is successful because it secured Chirán's trees, which is more than just a boon to the town's economy. It's a point of pride. The hillsides of newly planted saplings are proof to everyone in town that a united Chirán can fight any threat, even narcos with machine guns. These days, that kind of communal confidence is rare in Michoacán. Its citizens aren't the only ones who believe in Chirán's future. Recently, the town won a $2 million grant from the Inter-American Development Bank to expand its pine forest to accommodate Chirán's booming resin tapping industry.
¿Qué necesitas?
La pala para escarbarle.
Ah, sí, sí, sí. Uh-huh.
Ahorita me la van a traer. Una palita para que se plantan.
I'm on a hill behind the resineta again. A resinero is about to show me how to plant a tree. After digging 4 inches into the dirt with a little shovel, he tears open a burlap sack. He pulls out a pine sapling. Large stumps cover the hillside behind the resineta, proof of the damage done by the talamontes. But between those stumps grow dozens of saplings, enough that one can imagine a thick forest returning one day. The resinero puts the sapling into the hole and buries its roots with dirt. Then he pats the ground gently, the way a parent burps a newborn baby.
Of Chirán was reported by Jesse Alejandro Cottrell. It was edited by Nadia Raymond, with additional editing by Juleika Lantigua Williams. The Latino USA team includes Marlon Bishop, Fernanda Chavarri, Andres Caballero, Antonia Cerejido, Janice Yamoga, Sayer Quevedo, Jeannie Montalvo, Noam Hassenfeld, and Maggie Freeling. Our engineer and music editor is Cornelius McMoyler. Our production manager is Natalia Fidelholtz. We had help this week from WBEZ and Shelley Steffens. And if you like the music you heard on this episode, stop by latinousa.org and check out our weekly Spotify playlist. Our theme music was composed by Zenia Rubinos. And today, we say goodbye to Latino USA associate producer Noam Hassenfeld. If you're a longtime listener, you probably remember Noam's story about cemeteries in Texas that are segregated, or his story about a high school all-Mexican-American basketball team that made it big. Noam also made the music for our two-part investigation on the death of a man in a detention center that won the Robert F. Kennedy Award. Noam, we're going to miss your sharp writing, your great scoring, your eye-rolling dad jokes, and I'm going to miss having you around the office. Thank you for everything you did for Futuro Media, for Latino USA, and for In the Thick. We'll miss you, Noam. I'm your host and executive producer, Maria Hinojosa. Join us again next time. And in the meantime, look for us on all of your social media. Ciao.
Latino USA is made possible in part by Carnegie Corporation, promoting the advancement of knowledge and understanding. The W.K. Kellogg Foundation, a partner with communities where children come first. And the David and Lucille Packard Foundation, improving the lives of children, families, and communities, and restoring and protecting our planet.
That's Latino. This is Latino USA. Not that. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Next time on Latino USA, a house meant for immigrants is set ablaze, igniting tensions in a California neighborhood.
I travel a lot in my business, and my wife is home alone, and I'm not really all that excited about her being all by herself with 112 men just on the other side of the fence.
That's next time on Latino USA.
Ever get to Friday, look back on the week, and say to yourself, what just happened? I'm Sam Sanders. Check out my podcast, It's Been a Minute, where every Friday we catch up on the news and the culture of the week and try to make sense of it all. Listen on the NPR One app or wherever you get your podcasts.